Welcome to NBC Sports Pro Basketball Talk Podcast. Brett Polakoff here with Kurt Heelan. What is going on, Kurt?
Oh, not much. I'm excited. Next weekend is All-Star Weekend, and, you know, that's always fun. And plus, Brett, you know, you and I will be there in Houston covering this for PBT, and I did the important work of overlapping where our hotel is with the Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives Food Network map, and there's a really good Greek restaurant near us. So.
Perfect. I'm glad you always do the legwork on these types of trips. That's going to be awesome. Yeah, All-Star Week away. We'll get into that a little later on in the show here. First off, want to get into the Thursday night games as always. We had the Lakers and the Celtics as the first game last night, and you kind of need two teams to show up for there to actually be a rivalry game. Unfortunately, only Boston did that. This game was over after three quarters. 23-8 run in the final 5 minutes of the third for Boston really put this one away. Celtics led 95-69 after three, shot 16 of 21 from the field in the third quarter, better than 76%. And at that point, the Lakers were just 3 of 16 from three-point distance for the game. Celtics were at over 59% shooting. Really wasn't close. Plenty to talk about in Los Angeles, obviously. But first off, how has Boston been able to string together six straight wins since Rajon Rondo went down with the torn ACL?
You know what they've done, and it's a great contrast with what the Lakers have done, because, you know, obviously both teams are battling a lot of injuries this season. But the Celtics are still playing to their players' strengths. I mean, what they've said is, all right, we're minus our, you know, great point guard. I don't expect anybody to be a point guard. And they're getting their shots with Paul Pierce creating some shots, getting some stuff in transition, but a lot of ball movement. I mean, their ball movement is fantastic now. They're sharing, they're moving off the ball. They're playing to their strengths as opposed to the Lakers, who seem to be like, when somebody goes down, they just try to find another piece to fit into the system rather than playing to the strengths of the guys who are still on the court, and it's not working.
Yeah, it's been amazing what the Celtics have been getting out of guys like Avery Bradley and Jeff Green off the bench. You know, Paul Pierce has been, you know, consistent leading them in scoring. He came out on fire last night. You know, Kevin Garnett seems to never miss a shot from 20 feet out. You know, that's where they like to get him the ball. That's how he got his 25,000 career points last night on a jumper over Earl Clark. So Celtics have been really impressive. You know, tough to tell whether the Lakers just kind of ran into a bit of a buzzsaw in Boston or if this is going to be a longer-term problem. They had strung together six wins in their last seven games before this one. Shifting gears here to the Lakers side, you know, Dwight Howard returned from injury after missing the last three games with pain in his shoulder. He didn't look great. He finished with 9 points, nine rebounds. Played more than half the fourth quarter in a 32-point game for some reason. Mike D'Antoni, I guess, said afterward he wanted to get him in a rhythm, but I don't know how much rhythm you're getting playing with, you know, the reserves. You're not playing with any of the starters at that point. What are your thoughts on Dwight Howard? Did he come back too early based on maybe feeling some of the pressure from the comments made by Kobe Bryant and Steve Nash? Or was he just trying to help out his team now that Pau Gasol is going to be out of the lineup for a while?
A little of both, I think. But I think, honestly, the more I watch him play, the more I think he came back too early at the start of the season. I mean, there was pressure on him, them, and this, you know, the Lakers' new super team and how they wanted to do all this. And he raced back at the beginning of the season, and his back's never been right. He's never been right and never been as explosive. And if he's not controlling the defensive end, I mean, to me, that's the end where the Lakers continue to have problems. They put up points. But Pau Gasol actually did a solid job defensively for them in the paint, and their offense was much better with him there. Howard has to own the defensive end of the paint. He's got to block shots, alter shots, get rebounds. If he doesn't make them a solid to good defensive team, it doesn't matter how good their offense is. So that's the end where he's not executing. And part of it's he's not healthy. I mean, obviously he's not healthy. But part of it is that he's not fighting through it. I mean, he's not playing with the kind of anger and passion and desire that fans want to see and fans expect, especially, I think, teammates expect if you are going to be a team leader. If you are going to be, you know, the future face of the Lakers, you can't kind of fold up when things get hard.
Yeah, I don't think Dwight's used to this type of environment in Los Angeles, you know, like Kobe said, where it's championship or bust. You know, the expectations are just through the roof. And, you know, you hit it right on the head. Dwight has to play with energy and intensity. It doesn't matter if his legs aren't quite there. No one's going to fault him if he doesn't jump as high as normal or if he fumbles away a rebound. You know, his hands haven't been great this entire season, but they want to see him at least running around pretty much as fast as he can, right? They want to see him hustle. They want to see him, you know, just bring some energy and intensity so that his teammates can feed off of it. And that's really what they're missing from him. I mean, Gasol was, you know, seriously engaged in those last few games that the Lakers won when he got the starting center spot back with Dwight sidelined with the injury. You know, the Lakers feed off that. You know, they need one of their big guys to play with intensity and energy. You know, Gasol's not the greatest defender in the world, but he's certainly capable, you know, when he's active and engaged. He's looking for his shot offensively. They need that out of Dwight, you know, from an energy standpoint, even if his, you know, from a basic skill set standpoint, he's limited due to the injury.
Yeah, and like I said, I think it's mostly at the defensive end that they really need that from him. And look, last year, before he was injured, Dwight Howard was as good a pick-and-roll big defender as there was. He was fantastic. His ability to kind of hold off drives and then recover was – he's so fleet-footed when healthy. How he dealt with screens, how they dealt with picks yesterday was just atrocious as a team, and Howard was a part of that and often a key part of that. And he just – you know, they starting with the Charlotte game and then especially Sunday against the Heat – you know, if they lose those two games, Charlotte's always been tough for the Lakers, and it's a second night of a back-to-back. That's one of those teams that they just seem to always struggle against. Miami's Miami. You know, they lose those two games, they're back to six games under 500.
Yeah, you know, obviously that's going to make it tough if they continue to slide up and down like that. But, you know, as bad as LA has looked, you know, after last night, you said, you know, we got those two games coming up, we'll see what happens. But right now, they're still just 3.5 games out of the playoff picture because Portland and Houston can't seem to play much better than 500 basketball, you know, to gain any type of separation. Do you think the Lakers are getting more opportunity than perhaps they should, you know, as the season progresses, given that the bottom of the West is much weaker than it's been in recent years?
Yeah, they certainly are. I mean, I think in a lot of years, they would definitely be out of the mix. And they're still, look, they're still going to have to string together a heck of a run to get into the playoffs. But it hasn't been as deep and as competitive at the bottom. I mean, normally you see it. The difference between the 6 or 7 seed in the West and even the 10 or 11 seed has been just a few games. I mean, it's been really tight. And that's not really the case this year. There's been some real separation. And part of that's, you know, part of that's injuries. Part of that is, you know, we thought Minnesota would be in the mix, and they're just not because of injuries. And Houston hasn't, you know, Houston and like you said, Portland – just aren't pulling away. They're not playing consistently. At, you know, Houston can put up 140 one night and then just look like a mess the next.
Well, assuming this is the effort that we see out of Dwight Howard, you know, for the foreseeable future, next week, next couple weeks, you know, through the All-Star break, what do the Lakers need to do? You know, they obviously can't rely on Dwight at this point. What do they need to do from a team standpoint, you know, to try to win some games, you know, and string together that streak that you were talking about?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question. I, you know, like I said, I like what you've seen from teams that have an identity like Boston, and you've seen it with Chicago. You've seen it with the Pacers. I mean, all teams without their star players who are still succeeding because they came in with a defensive identity. They came in with a sense of who they are. The Lakers never developed that, especially, you know, when they went through three coaches in the first 11 games of the season. You just don't develop any sense of identity. And right now they're trying to fit the pieces into Mike D'Antoni's system, but they're not sure exactly where those pieces should go, let alone how to fit. And I'm not sure how they do that outside of just a hot run by Kobe and Steve Nash putting in some more points. And look, they're just not going to go anywhere if they don't get Dwight Howard to defend and they don't start playing better at that end. It's just not going to matter.
Well, and the Lakers confirmed yesterday that the timetable for Pau Gasol being out, you know, it's essentially until the end of the season. They said 6 to 8 weeks minimum. Well, April 4th is 8 weeks from yesterday's release. At that point, there would be 7 games left in the regular season for the Lakers. You know, who knows if it's even worth them coming back at that point, you know, the way things have been going. But, you know, with that timetable confirmed, now they know that they're going to be out without Gasol for that long. Do the Lakers look to possibly make a move to add size before the trade deadline, even if it's just, you know, like a minimum salary player just to get another body in there?
They might. I mean, they might need to because, I mean, they're running Zachary out there, who's certainly a minimum, you know, the 60th pick in the draft.
Yeah.
Guy. And there are some guys available. I mean, look, the Heat just picked up and Chris Anderson off the you know, scrap pile.
Off the street.
and he's supplanted Joel Anthony in their rotation. Like, he's, you know, gives them more. And he's exactly what the Lakers need in a lot of ways in terms of he's not going to get them a lot of points. But Chris brings it every game. I mean, for all of Chris's flaws, you don't question his effort night in, night out, play in, play out. And that's the kind of thing the Lakers really need. And they've got to find a little bit more depth with size, because if it really does come down to, you know, Dwight Howard missing games because his shoulder gets aggravated again and he's kind of up and down, they've got to get some consistent energy from somewhere. They got that from Jordan Hill before he got injured, and they need another guy to fill that role.
Yeah, and then, you know, you also have the fact that, you know, Dwight could just simply foul out of games like he did last night, although I think he just kind of wanted to get off the floor at that point. You know, he was just laying bodies on guys anytime they came into the paint. I think he just was done at that point.
Yeah, he had checked out at that point. But they've got to find a way to they've just got to find a way to get consistency off the bench, consistency in a lot, in pretty much every area of the game. I don't know that anyone outside of Kobe Bryant is consistent night in and night out for them.
Well, as always, we'll definitely be interested to see what ends up happening in Los Angeles. Well, the second half of the TNT doubleheader, we had the Nuggets hosting the Bulls. You know, Bulls actually hung in there for the first half, scoring, you know, like 58 points by halftime, which is very uncharacteristic. But third quarter, you know, much like the Lakers-Celtics game, Denver turned it on, outscored Chicago 37-16, put this game away. Lead reached as many as 30 points in the third. You know, the Nuggets have been, you know, kind of quietly very hot lately. They've won 8 straight. All but one of those have been at home, so the schedule may have something to do with it. But, you know, Denver's been 15-3 since January 1st. They, you know, got off to a rough start. They had a very tough schedule. Now the schedule's kind of been a little bit easier in their favor. Is Denver coming together and figuring things out, or has the schedule just kind of balanced out and now they're finally getting a favorable run?
I think it's a little bit of mostly the latter. I think they've always been a good team. I think they've always been a borderline, you know, top four or five seed type of team in the West. They're not San Antonio or the Thunder or even the Clippers, I think, but they're right there in that next tier. But I think you hit the nail on the head. At the start of the season, they were on the road a lot against good teams, and that's just a tough way to start the season. They had a string of, for a while, it was 12 of 13 at home. So, yeah, suddenly, you know, look, they are 22-3 on the season at home. They are a very good team in their home arena. And that's something to watch for, actually, just going forward. When you talk about playoffs and you talk about that first round where they're probably going to be fighting for that 4-5 seed, if it's Memphis or Golden State and they have to go to Denver for most of the games, Denver is the favorite team. If Denver has to go on the road to Memphis or go on the road to Golden State or Utah or wherever, then that's a different story. But they are such a good team at home. If they can keep playing like this, if they can hold that fourth seed down and get that first round at home, they have a good chance of advancing.
Yeah, they just have a very tough team to match up against. They have a lot of speed. They have a lot of athleticism. You got Kenneth Faried. You know, JaVale McGee's up and down, but he's athletic as all get out. You know, the point guard spot, they got Ty Lawson, who's as fast as, you know, top five fast guys in the league running the point guard. And then you got Andre Miller coming off the bench, who's as smart as anybody at the league, in the league running that position. They're just a tough team to match up with and to deal with. And like you said, especially at home, they're going to put up a ton of points if you don't get out and stop them. And I agree, they're going to be a very tough matchup. But, you know, we'll kind of see how it goes. You know, you mentioned their home record. Now that they've had a stretch of home games, you know, they played almost, you know, more than half their home games already this season. So we'll see if it balances out or if they can continue. But there's no question the Nuggets have been super impressive, you know, since the first of the year.
Yeah, and they're a lot of fun to watch. They are up there with the Warriors on my you know, league pass. I just want to watch the game because I enjoy watching them playlist.
Yeah, exactly. Over on the Bulls side, you know, not much to talk about. It was just one of those games where, you know, the defense couldn't keep up with what Denver was putting together. You know, had a little bit of a trade rumor pop up in Chicago where Bulls were talking about sending Carlos Boozer and Nate Robinson to Toronto in exchange for Andrea Bargnani and John Lucas the 10th or whatever, you know, I think it's the 3rd, but you get it. As far as that deal goes, what do you see in what are your thoughts on why Chicago would make that trade? Any reason other than finances factoring in there? I mean, right now with Derrick Rose out, Boozer and Robinson are the only guys really that could score on that team, right?
Yeah, I we'll get into this with Agri Sam in a few minutes from CSN Chicago, but it's all about money. And this is, look, the Bulls are a team that if they had an owner who wanted to, could play in the Knicks, Lakers, Celtics, you know, old Mark Cuban, I don't care about the luxury tax levels if they wanted. I mean, they have that kind of revenue coming in. But they don't, you know, they haven't, they paid the tax, I think, 1 year. They never pay the tax. And they're not going to start. And it's a purely financial move. I mean, because Boozer's actually played fairly well this season. I mean, he's, for as much heat as he takes, I mean, for his play, you know, he's an above average big. He gives them, he's overpaid, but he gives them quality minutes inside. And Andrea Bargnani is, look, Toronto is willing to trade him for a case of ankle tape.
Exactly.
I mean, they will gladly give him up. But it's interesting that they don't want to take on Boozer's salary, that they're financially concerned too. I mean, Boozer makes $5 million more a year. They have the same contract length. And Toronto's got to look at that and say, is that really the best we can get from Bargnani, or can we do a better job? Can we find something better just taking back virtually nothing and just keeping our salary down? And apparently they're leaning that way, or at least looking around for something like that.
Yeah, because nobody that's serious about contending basketball-wise wants Bargnani at this point. I mean, basically, as soon as he went down, the Raptors went on this huge run, started winning games. And again, it's not all his fault, but it's just that the rest of the pieces on that team don't really fit with what he gives you, which is a big who doesn't really defend and likes to just, you know, shoot from outside for the most part. I mean, the guy can score on occasion when he's healthy, but he's probably not worth the risk contract-wise for anybody, you know, that's actually serious about putting together a contender.
Just to put some numbers on that, the Raptors started 4-18 until Bargnani went down. They were 13-13 with him. You know, they're not a great team, but that's a huge improvement, and it's not a coincidence.
All right. We are fortunate today on the PBT podcast to have with us one of the best beat guys in the around, and he covers the Chicago Bulls, who have been fascinating this year. It's Agri Sam of CSN Chicago. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Kurt.
All right, let's get the obvious question out of the way first, because I need to ask this. How close is Derrick Rose? I mean, obviously he's taking contact in practice, and he sounds like he's going pretty full bore. It's got to be close.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he's going to come back sometime after the All-Star break, whether that's right away or early to mid-March. You know, nobody knows at this point. You know, the Bulls are not rushing Derrick. He's going to have to be completely cleared by the doctors, of course. But it's really going to depend on his comfort level. When he's confident and really, I mean, he wants to come back right now. I mean, Derrick's such a competitor. But when he's comfortable, you know, playing, that's when he's going to be back on the court. Now, the one thing to note, although he's been practicing since a little bit before the new year, and he's been taking full contact since early January, early to mid-January, they still have not done 5-on-5 drills. And the Bulls are not a team that scrimmages a lot during the season. So when that takes place and he does some of that for a while, you know, there are no setbacks or anything, I think that's when we're going to start to see Derrick get closer to returning to the court. Now, obviously, with the Bulls' schedule, you know, a lot of road games in the month of February, it's going to be hard to say when that will take place, that 5-on-5 stuff. But at the same time, he's making a lot of steady progress. He's been playing a lot of 2-on-2 in practice, also doing a lot of drills with assistant coaches. So he's getting there, but obviously it's going to be a long process.
And what's been impressive with the Bulls this season, and I think it contrasts with like the Lakers who, and the Celtics, who were kind of the big story out of Thursday night, you know, the Celtics are doing this too. They are thriving without their star player. They are playing fantastic ball and, you know, 4 seed in the East and doing really well without Rose. How are they doing? I mean, is it just a commitment to the system? Is it a commitment to the defense that has this team playing so well, you know, without their leader, without their MVP?
You hit it on the head, Kurt. I mean, last year they had to experience some extended time without Derrick, and obviously it was a lockout-shortened season, but he missed close to half the season, the regular season, and obviously, you know, the playoffs after the first game he was done too. And the Bulls, you know, got used to playing without him. Now, they did, you know, change that supporting cast a lot. The bench mob that everybody loved so much in Chicago last year is mostly gone besides Taj Gibson. They replaced him with a lot of one-year guys, and, you know, a lot of people were skeptical at first, but, you know, Tibbs is a guy that, you know, you're going to play his system, you're going to, you know, devote yourself to his style of play, which is obviously very defensive-oriented, and they've bought in. I mean, just like last year, you've seen on, you know, any given night, certain players will step up. You know, you'll get contributions from unexpected sources, you know, from Nate Robinson to Marco Bellinelli. You know, you've had guys, you know, really be consistent. And even on certain nights, you've had, you know, a rookie like Marcus Teague, you know, step up. Jimmy Butler has really emerged and looks like a guy that's a real keeper in the NBA. So, obviously, the Bulls, you know, have been getting a lot of contributions from the bench. But then when you look at starters like Joakim Noah and Luol Deng, they've really taken their game up to another level. I mean, Lou was an all-star last year. Joe's really struggled with injuries in the past, but he's really raised his game as well. And Tibbs demands nothing less. I mean, Carlos Boozer was Eastern Conference Player of the Month, of the week, you know, a little while back. And, you know, he's a guy that's really been criticized both in the media and by fans. But, you know, without Derek in the lineup, I think everyone knows they have to do their part, hold down the fort. And when he gets back, no, he won't be the same Derek Rose. But when you look at, like, the trade deadline, teams make big additions. Derrick Rose is a guy that already knows the system. You know, he's a superstar. And even if he's, you know, 60%, 70%, 80% of what he used to be by the end of the season, that's a huge lift.
And I think that kind of brings to the next question, which is, I was saying to someone the other day, you know, in the East, you're at, it's Miami versus everyone. It's who can challenge the Heat, because they're clearly, you know, they're the bar that has to be cleared if you want to contend for a title out of the East. Is Chicago, with Rose back at, say, 80% by the time they get to the playoffs, and if they can stay healthy, are they the second best team in the East? Are they the most likely challenger?
I think so. I mean, just based on defense. I mean, we know in the playoffs, defense wins. And based on their defense, based on their rebounding, you know, based on, you know, their team play, not relying on, you know, one particular guy, I really do believe so. Now, Indiana, right there in the Central Division, they're going to be tough. You know, when Danny Granger gets back in the lineup, I'm interested to see how he meshes with Paul George, who's definitely become kind of the alpha dog of that team, and playing small forward, which is obviously Danny Granger's position, as opposed to shooting guard, which he used to play. You know, I'm interested to see how the Pacers look. But the Bulls certainly have the Knicks number. We've seen that during the course of the regular season this year, both at home and away. And I don't really see anyone else, you know, really making that push. Now, Miami, obviously the defending champions, but the Bulls, and it's only been a one-game sample size, but when the Bulls went down there, you know, last month, I mean, they were really surprisingly effective because of that size. You know, they dominated the glass, and this is a documented problem with Miami, you know, the rebounding, playing this small ball style that, you know, won the championship for them last year. But obviously LeBron James, you know, he's on another level right now, so we'll have to see what happens. But a lot of people thought with Omer Asik going to Houston, the Bulls would really take a hit inside. But again, Joakim Noah, Taj Gibson, Carlos Boozer, they've really stepped up a little bit. And I think if Derek is back to where he used to be, you know, Miami's going to have a battle on there.
You mentioned Carlos Boozer. His name has come up a lot in a trade. That can we just admit that this is a little bit far-fetched? The Bargnani for Boozer trade probably isn't happening.
Probably not. I mean, I don't see Toronto wanting to add, you know, that much money. I mean, obviously, Bargnani, Brian Colangelo, you know, mentioned that, you know, he admitted that Bargnani is on the block, but at the same time, I'm not sure Carlos is what they're looking for. Maybe from a playing perspective, but not adding that much salary after picking up Rudy Gay. I think it's a situation where Toronto knows they can make this deal if they really want to, but they're going to continue to seek out other trade partners. I think the Lakers trade, you know, with Pau Gasol, that rumored deal was probably the most likely to happen until Pau got hurt. But I don't see Toronto just sitting there and saying, okay, we'll take this without looking at other options. The Bulls certainly, I believe, would like to make that trade. You know, financially, that would help them in the short term. But at the same time, if they continue to watch Bargnani, who just came back to the lineup, you know, they might start to believe, okay, this guy, while he does have some talent, he's really not a great fit for Tibbs' system. So, yeah, I don't believe it's going to happen, but at the same time, it is a possibility. It's the NBA. You never know. Stranger things have happened.
Yeah, certainly strange trades have happened. Are the Bulls going to be active, though, or are they just going to kind of bring Rose back, put him in the system with the guys they've got, and see what that can do?
Yeah, I think that's what's going to happen. I think they're going to just let Derek come back. I don't think they want to rock the boat too much. Again, if a trade comes across the table that, you know, makes sense for them, and specifically, you know, getting rid of salary, you know, this is a team that's never paid the luxury tax. So if a trade for Carlos or Rip Hamilton that really helps them and they don't have to take back money, you know, presents themselves, well, maybe they make it, but I don't believe they're going to be very active at the deadline.
Yeah, I kind of got a feeling that, like you said before, Derrick Rose is the addition, and that's about as good a trade deadline addition as anyone is going to have. Thank you for your time today, Agri.
Thanks a lot, Kurt.
We'll see you soon.
All right.
All right, good stuff from Agri Sam there on the Bulls situation. You know, as we discussed at the top of the podcast here, all the All-Star participants were announced on Thursday night. You know, the three other events, we got the Shooting Stars, which is, you know, I guess okay to watch for the half-court shots that everybody has to throw up. You know, that's kind of the highlight of that one. You got the Skills Challenge, the obstacle course type situation, where basically if you make more than one mistake, you're screwed. If you're a point guard, if you miss that bounce pass twice into the hoop, you're done. So, but it's still fun to watch those guys run around and, you know, compete at that high level. Three-point contest should be interesting. Matt Bonner whined his way into the contest, so congratulations to him.
I like that lineup. I mean, you've got Novak, you've got Ryan Anderson, you've got Bonner, who, look, however he gets in, the guy can shoot the three. You've got Steph Curry in there. That's a good lineup of three-point shooters.
Yeah, I always say that, you know, I would like to see that contest change to where instead of guys pulling balls by themselves off the rack, they could have a teammate pass to them in rhythm. And I think you'd see guys, you might see somebody go through like the entire rack. You know, imagine if Rondo, not now, of course, because he's injured, but in years past when Pierce won it, imagine Rondo just throwing perfect chest passes to Paul Pierce, you know, in rhythm and just draining those like five in a row. I'd like to see him kind of change it up and see how that would work. But yeah, you got some guys that can definitely shoot. Steph Curry obviously has been lights out this season, so he'll be interesting. You know, should be a good time. But then we get to the dunk contest. And, you know, some people criticize the lineup this year because, you know, there's no star power anymore. It's tough to get the big names to compete for whatever reason. Either they don't want to be embarrassed by, you know, someone younger and more athletic, or they're just not interested. There's just not the cachet involved like it was back in the day when you had Michael Jordan and Dominique Wilkins going at it. But this year's lineup, you know, for casual NBA fans out there, this is one of the better lineups in recent years. You got some guys that can not only dunk, but they can jump out of the building. So running down the lineup real quick, we got Jeremy Evans, who won it last year. Gerald Green's back in. You know, he had that famous cupcake dunk in 2007 in Las Vegas, which was awesome. Eric Bledsoe of the Clippers, who can, you know, who's small. You know, those small guys always seem to do well in these types of contests. Terrence Ross from the Raptors, you know, again, not a lot of people may have seen him, but, you know, he's been an exciting dunker as well. We mentioned Kenneth Faried when we were talking about the Nuggets. His athleticism is insane. He's got significant hops. And then finally, we have James White. And, you know, again, if you're not a hardcore basketball fan, you may not know who this guy is. But if you go to YouTube and just pull up James White dunks, your jaw will drop. I mean, this guy can fly, literally. He jumps from the free throw line like it's no big deal. His most famous dunk is a through-the-legs, free throw line dunk. You know, and the reason, you know, quite frankly, he hasn't made it into the dunk contest to this point, he hasn't been on an NBA roster, you know, when the contest has been going on. You know, so he's appeared in D-League dunk contests, you know, international dunk contests, but this guy has to be considered the favorite coming into this thing, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah. And like you said, I think a lot of people don't know who he is. And I plan on running pretty soon up on the site. If not on Friday, you'll see it up on PBT over the weekend. There is a YouTube video of Gerald Green and James White going back and forth in a dunk contest in Europe from a couple years ago that's insane. Those two, I mean, this is going to be, I think, potentially, I mean, look, I thought Shannon Brown would be great in the dunk.
we were all duped by that one.
We all, you know, there are misses. But these are guys who are great dunkers. There's a whole lot of real talent in terms of dunks on this lineup. And you're right, it lacks. Look, LeBron's not going to do it. Blake Griffin's not going to do it. Go do it. They tried to get DeAndre Jordan to do it, I know, and he turned them down multiple times.
Yeah.
The guys they got are dunkers, are great dunkers. I mean, again, go through PBT and you will get the picture we ran earlier in the season of Gerald Green getting his entire head over the rim at a practice just because he could. just showing off. It's going to be, I think this has the potential to be a really good show on the dunk contest.
Yeah, and then, you know, there's a big distinction between guys that are great in-game dunkers and then guys that are great dunk contest dunkers. And I think this year they did it right. They got guys that are great dunk contest dunkers. They know how to put on a show. They know how to do it, hopefully, without costumes and props. I mean, that had its place, and it was unique the first couple years that it went down. But I think we're all over it at this point. I mean, you know, last year we had somebody dunking in the dark. It was supposed to be like a glow-in-the-dark dunk, but, you know, we were in the arena, and we couldn't even see what the heck was going on. So, you know, those gimmicks seem to go out the window, and I think they got it right with this year's lineup.
Yeah, I don't mind some gimmicks. It just can't. It's gotten a little over the top. If you have one dunk that's a bit gimmicky, then that's fine. But you know, we don't need anybody jumping over a car with a gospel choir again. I think that kind of like at that moment you're like, and the gimmicks are done. But this is like I said, I don't think James White or Gerald Green needs a lot of gimmicks to make their dunks impressive. So I think you're spot on. And the guy I'm not going to sleep on because I just love the power dunkers is Manimal. I think Fareed could be a guy that becomes a force in this thing just because he is the biggest, strongest guy on that lineup.
Well, yeah, again, you know, if these guys do what they've done in the past and they stay away from the silliness, I definitely think it could be one of the best contests we've seen in recent years. All right, well, that's all the time we have for this week. Make sure to leave us some comments. Let us know how we're doing. And, Kurt, look forward to speaking with you next time.
All right, we'll see you in Houston.